So welcome guys to episode number 4 of Yalla Let's Code podcast, where I interview a software engineer to share their entrepreneurial story. So in this episode, we have another guest from the Shopify space, and I would like to introduce Daniel, and he will give us an introduction about himself. So I have the mic right now, Mike, so you can introduce yourself.
All right. Thank you, Elias, for having me on the show. Like he said, my name is Daniel. I'm the founder of AbleStar, and we're a Shopify app development company within the Shopify ecosystem. So we have a series of 5 apps that we provide to over 10,000 Shopify merchants on the App Store. I think we can get into maybe more of the background later on, but I've been familiar with Shopify since about 2016 and really always interested in computers since when I was a child.
I'm good. So nice to meet you, Daniel. And this is our 4th episode, and all of the guests are from the Shopify space. So when this was like your first time that you ever code a website, or like your first experience with coding?
Yeah, this goes back a while. The first time I did coding was with a program language called QBasic, and it was run in Microsoft DOS back, I want to say maybe mid-90s was when I was doing it, so a long time ago. Just as a bit of background, we moved around a lot growing up. We lived actually in Morocco, France, Belgium, Germany, and from the very beginning, my dad had a computer so he could do email with people back in the United States where I'm from originally. So we had a computer in the home, you know, from, I guess, as far as my life goes, the very beginning. And I really got, started programming with a language called QBasic, which is, very different than what we do now. But you could write like simple text games and write a few squares to the pixelated screen. That's kind of when I got hooked.
Okay, that's good. Always was a long time. And can you tell us about your life career with related to software engineer? What did you study, and how did you get your first coding job? And
coding was always something I kind of did for fun. And high school, I moved more to web development, and then also modifications for video games and level design and all. And I think the underlying theme was this technology is cool, but really being interested in how it works underneath. So not just using a game, but figuring out how you can make your own game or how it works, you know, behind the scenes. I went to university then back in the United States, and at that point I studied international relations, and it wasn't really well thought out. I just thought that, you know, I wanted to travel and live overseas again, so I figured I'll study that. But during college, most of the summers, and then after college, the work I found was IT related, whether it was designing websites or doing more assistive administrative type work. It was easier to get jobs in computers than international relations. It paid better, and it was also just more interesting for me. After university, then I ended up in Washington, D.C., partly because of the international relations degree, but it was the same situation where the work I was finding was actually with technology related. And this is also in 2008, so in the U.S., the economy wasn't that good. But I started doing freelance work for people, finding jobs on Craigslist and other sites, and eventually that took me to my first full-time position doing IT. And I worked for a small software company in Washington, D.C., and it was a SaaS company in 2008-2009, so not as common as it was now, but I learned a lot of stuff, just how to manage customer support tickets, infrastructure, the more business side, like what does recurring revenue mean and things like that. After that, there was a few other jobs I had. One was in computer security, where we would do investigations. So if a company got hacked, we would go in afterwards and figure out what the hackers, what information they were looking for, kind of try and retrace what they did and block them so they couldn't get back in the network. And then I worked at Sequoia Capital for a while as a data scientist. And there we did a lot of analysis of publicly traded companies to see if they would be good investments or not. And then in 2021, kind of took the jump and started working full-time on Shopify stuff, and been working on AbleStar, I guess, last 3 years or so now.
What a journey. So there's a lot of point in your journey that you switch, like you touch many things other than IT, for example, customer support, business side. And I think it's like a combination of all the experience that led us to what you're currently working on, which is the Shopify lab or the Shopify development agency that you're currently working on, and leading to this current position as a founder of the Shopify development agency. And like you have a lot of Shopify app currently in the App Store. What was your first experience working with Shopify? It was like building a Shopify store for yourself, for a client that you get hooked with Shopify, or you start directly in the Shopify development space?
Yeah. So for me, I started directly in the Shopify development. I was aware of Shopify and interested in the API. And my thought was I should try and build an app. And the first app we built is an app to migrate from WooCommerce to Shopify. So I was thinking, oh, this will be easy. You just call the WooCommerce API, download the products, upload them to Shopify. And for a basic version 0.1, that was simple. The thing I didn't realize was WooCommerce is so customizable that it's very hard to capture all these edge cases with different types of installations and customizations, because you can pretty much write whatever code you want on top of a WooCommerce installation. So that was my first steps into the Shopify app development experience and kind of how I got started in the area.
That's good. And how was your experience working with Shopify as a developer in 2016? Because I think back then it wasn't a good developer experience. And also I started at like 2019 with Shopify, and it wasn't that good compared to what we currently have. I think Shopify take the developer documentation and experience seriously in the last 3 years. And how was your experience working with Shopify back then in 2016?
Yeah, like you said, you can definitely see that they've put a lot of resources into the documentation and everything now compared to how it was before. The one thing I kind of miss about before, though, is things were a lot simpler. So a big example is with the Shopify APIs now, you have a REST API and a GraphQL API, and some features are only available in certain APIs. And back then it was just a REST API. And I think there was a few other cases with different versions of the CLI now and different JavaScript libraries and Remix and all, where it seems like there's so many different tools now. And back then there were tools and there were problems with them, and overall things are better now, but I do at times miss the simplicity. One thing that is really nice now is we have versioned APIs. So at the beginning there was just a Shopify API, and if they added features, you know, it would show up one day and you kind of have to deal with it. And the way they've switched to having 4 releases a year of the API, I know sometimes it's a pain to have to update the API versions, but that's far better than having to just suddenly have things change on you.
Sounds good. And currently you work with Shopify from 2016 until now. What thing that you missed from the old version of Shopify and would like that is still available in the newer version of Shopify as a developer?
Before, they had all these in-person events for Shopify, like Shopify Unite, and I never actually went to one of those, but now that I have the opportunity to, they don't have those in-person events, so I do kind of miss that and feel like I missed the boat, as they say.
Yeah, I share the same feeling about like in-person, especially for Shopify Unite, which is under the Shopify partnered event. And when I was like, I have the opportunity to attend one of these, this Sunday digital version of the Shopify Unite, which I was a bit upset about this, but hopefully they will go back to old version, to in-person version, because I think nothing beats in-person event, especially for networking and especially for meeting other people. The digital version is great, but it's not the same feeling as an in-person. Awesome. Yes. I would like to know, currently, you have mini Shopify app in the Shopify store. And I would like to know your first Shopify app idea that you work on and you publish to the public.
The first one was this WooCommerce importer that I'd mentioned a little bit before. And yeah, at the point when we built the basic framework and published it, the Shopify app store is a lot less competitive. Several years ago, there were far fewer apps. Now I think we're closing in about 10,000 apps. So it just seemed like magic almost. You publish something, and I don't come from a marketing background. I'm on the technical side, and the marketing stuff's always the tricky, hard stuff. And just being able to publish an app and have people use the app and email you questions and respond to them and pay for using the app, just it seemed like magic.
Yeah, I agree with you. And how was the experience of the first app? It's like the first app get like a success, or like at the first it wasn't a lot of traction and you iterate on to make it a success product?
The app did pretty well until Shopify added a feature where they could import products automatically for free. And I think that's an important part for the platform. The kind of angle that we had though is we would also import the orders that Shopify wouldn't do that, and we could link the orders with the products. And so we took that app took a hit with the revenue, and that's part of the risks of building a company on another platform. But at the same time, we got a whole lot of benefit from the marketing of being on the App Store. And even when Shopify added this feature, it didn't take the revenue down to zero because we still had some unique features. And I think that's something that Shopify does other times. We'll see them release their own apps for certain features. And I don't think of those as kind of competing directly with the apps, with the other apps on the App Store, but just saying, here's like the basic level of features that we think we need for an app, like a, I don't know, an upsell app or an email app or what have you. And then if you think you can do better, you can build your like premium version of a email app on top of it. But Shopify kind of makes sure that there's at least some functionality for merchants.
Yeah, I totally agree with you about this point and about like a Shopify releasing a native application that's competing with other Shopify developers. And as you mentioned, it does always have like basic, very basic functionality and with like a very minimal like a customization. So it does give you an advantage even if it's a competition with Shopify directly, but you still have advantage to be able to build your own app and like a build feature that customer would like to have. And also I think Shopify does not does a good job of listening to customer feedback for their Shopify app, because many Shopify app that is built by Shopify in the Shopify App Store have a very bad rating, like a start or like or less. They are not taking it seriously, like to be able to compete with Shopify third-party developer. And it might give you an advantage to be able, if you see an opportunity that like for a native app that you would like to solve a problem for a specific customer, it's not like a Shopify is not your enemy, so it will be your partner. So I think this is a good point to mention.
Yeah, and if you're even looking for ideas of something to build, looking through those bad reviews for the Shopify apps from Shopify and also on the community forums, you can get a whole bunch of people complaining like, oh, this, they don't have this feature, they don't have this feature, and that kind of could give you an idea of like which features to include in your like premium version of the app.
Yeah, exactly. And how did the idea of the WooCommerce importer come to you?
Yeah, at the time I think for me, it was more of a experimentation just with the APIs and trying to learn Shopify than any specific need. I do remember looking on the App Store at the time and not seeing any good tool there. There was an old Shopify tool that would bring WordPress posts into Shopify, and that's been removed for a while now, but there wasn't anything specific to Shopify and WooCommerce. So it was kind of an idea of, I want to play around and experiment and see how these APIs work. And also there wasn't anything that did exactly that now. Yeah, I know that's not I think the correct answer is, oh, I went and interviewed customers and, you know, found their pain points. And I think if I were doing it today, the process would have to be different because there's more competition on the App Store, and you have to building an audience and interacting with customers at the beginning is a lot more important. But back then I was lucky in the sense because of the timing that things just kind of took off.
Yeah, makes sense. And what was your second Shopify application?
Yeah, so the two issues with the WooCommerce importer was the support load was higher because every customer that's using it is kind of starting a new project. So you can't really build on, like, they've been using the app for 3 months or something. And the other thing is the payments are all one time because it's a migration process moving to Shopify. So it didn't make sense to me to charge a subscription for something that you're doing just one time. So the next app that we built was this bulk product editor, which is now our largest app. And that lets you just manage your product data a whole lot easier than you would within the Shopify admin. So you can, you know, increase prices with a few clicks, upload a spreadsheet to modify your data, and everything. You can see a preview of what changes you're going to make. And if you make the changes, you can undo them with just a click. And that was designed to be more of a tool that people would use on an ongoing basis. And then for that, we charge a subscription revenue. Yeah, so kind of change the business model there.
Sounds good. And I think the third app will be the automatic order tag, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah, the order tags was actually the last one that we published. In the meantime, we did two other apps. One is to track broken link visits to your Shopify store. So if someone lands on a 404 page, you can see that and see over time if lots of people are going to bad pages or bad links. And then you can create redirects to manage that and also scan your Shopify store to figure out if you have broken internal links. And then the other app we have is the email reports app where you can receive a daily or weekly report saying your sales for the last period were this much compared to the period before, your returns are up, these are the top selling products, things like that.
Okay, sounds good. And how many developers currently you have in your team?
Yeah, team of five, two of those are developers, and then customer support and marketing kind of round out.
So just two developers building all this app and managing one of them?
Yeah. At this point, more of the development is related to support tickets. So if there's some issues with that someone's having, kind of digging in and figuring out what's going on there. But another advantage is after several years of having these apps and people using them, the core features become pretty stable because you've had not just yourself testing it, but thousands of other people. And every once in a while, you get a really strange bug that you're not sure where it came from. But by and large, things are a lot more stable.
Sounds good. So all of them are in-house teams, so you don't outsource any of the work?
No, depending on location, it might be a contractor relationship, but the development's all done with us. We don't have a outsourced development agency.
That's really good. Another question that I would like to have, so for someone just starting out that would like to get into the Shopify development and they would like to build their first Shopify app, what do you would like to recommend that? Based on the current situation of the Shopify store, the Shopify app store, how competitive is the Shopify store? Because back then it was less competitive, as you mentioned.
As far as specific ideas, kind of like what type of app to build, there's a few things I would keep in my mind, just generally. Which apps that have a subscription component are probably more better than apps that have one-off payment component. So like I was saying with the WooCommerce importer, that was just a one-time payment, and that's just a lot more difficult on you mentally than having something with a subscription. You also want an app that will be used over time, and we even have a problem with this sometimes with the bulk product editor. So if it's the holiday season, people use the app to launch sales and things like that, but then after the holidays they're not going to do these sales, so they don't need the app anymore. But if you have an app that's just part of the process of the company that's being used day in day out, then you'll see the visitors stick or the users stick around more. So as opposed, like if you're writing a Klaviyo or competitor to a Shopify email, people are going to be using that the entire year. So once you actually get someone to start using it, it's a lot more sticky. And then the third thing is, if possible, if it's something you can tie to revenue, and people, and myself, it's more like exciting to make $10 than to save $10. So if an app that helps with bringing in more sales, I think is more exciting to the merchants than an app that will just save you $10. And at the end of the day, you can only save so much money, but the growth is potentially a lot higher. So these three things, like a subscription model that's being used on a reoccurring basis and ideally tied to sales. Not all the apps have to have this, and our main one doesn't match up with all those either, but I think those are kind of like the direction I would look in just when you're evaluating ideas. And then as for actual ideas, there was a few things we talked about, like going through 1-star reviews on the official Shopify apps to see what people are complaining about, the community forums, and then also as much as you can, talking to merchants on Shopify. Yeah. And this is probably a little bit more difficult if you're new to the Shopify community. Like at this point, we've talked to merchants for years, and I know people to reach, I can reach out to, but if I'm just coming into the space, it's a lot more harder to make these initial connections. Like one option is if you have the ability to do some freelancing work for Shopify stores, it does help get some money in initially, but also it can get you talking with merchants and hearing more, learning more about their processes. And I think lots of times when you're working in a company or for someone, that's when you get a good idea of where they could actually use help with a new app.
Yeah.
And then the last thing I would say to that is, like at this point, I think most of the major features for Shopify on the App Store are built. So, you know, if you want to make an app that has pop-ups or a banner or even bulk editing, like there's a lot of apps already in each of those categories. So I wouldn't, just because you see another app in that category doesn't mean don't build it, because you're probably not going to find a category, but try and find one where it doesn't seem like there's a clear winner, and then one where the reviews or people in the community forums might indicate that there's a good bit of features or stuff that's missing.
Yeah, makes sense. I think these are all important points to consider when you are thinking about Shopify app development. And many of the guests share similar advice. One of the advice that you mentioned is to freelance with the Shopify store to help them. And through that, you can discover some unique problem that you can solve. And also you can have a potential customer and also someone to reach out and to ask them for feedback and to learn more about their problem, so you can come up with an idea for this problem to solve their issue. I think this is a good point to mention, and it's one of the key points to be able to find a good idea, because some of the Shopify idea would not be technically doable because of some limitation of Shopify. Let's say the Shopify checkout, like, let's say you need to think about this also when you are thinking about your idea, about how technical your idea is doable or not. So I think this is one of the things that you need to consider when thinking about Shopify app.
Yeah, you're right. Idea. One of the things that you reminded me of is another place to look for good ideas is in the announcements from Shopify for new features and new APIs. And the timing is good, because I think tomorrow or January 31st, so it'll be before this is released, I'm sure, but Shopify has their additions where they release a whole bunch of new features that they're planning for the next 6 months. And this happens twice a year, but it's a good way to see not only what direction Shopify is going, but to be able to try and find a potential to build an app on some of these new API features that they're developed. And in this space, new app developers do have an advantage over older ones, because the older apps have been using the legacy APIs and everything's kind of built that way. And you have all this code there. And if you're starting from scratch, you can take advantage of just the new APIs and the new code. So that's something I forgot before, but also just look at the Shopify change logs and the new announcements they make as far as APIs. And then you can kind of catch the wave of these new features.
Yeah, makes sense. Totally agree with you about this point. And one of the things we're talking about the Shopify Winter Edition, I would like to know, like, this is a question that I ask many of the Shopify guests. So what is special about Shopify that you work with Shopify for that as a platform, as a company?
Yeah, I don't think there's something tangible I can describe, but there's just like this intangible affinity I have towards Shopify. And I think some of that's like, you can tell that even at the top, like there's a strong developer focus, and that resonates with myself also, having the developer background. And just also the fact it's like, it's not based in San Francisco or New York or Austin, but it's, you know, up in Canada and Ottawa. And the idea that you can build a large company outside of one of these like tech headquarters in the United States is appealing to me. And like, moving around a lot as a kid and even now, you see all these people have technical skills, but they don't necessarily have the ability to live in San Francisco or New York. And so seeing a company that's able to accomplish so much outside of these huge cities is very impressive. And
that's a really good point. And so anyone can build anything on the internet. If you have something to share, you can just share it, and the world is open to anyone. So
I still think it's easier for some people than others, like with language and all. There's still some barriers, but compared to how things were before, it's far better. And also, if you have a situation where you can't, or you're not able to work from like 9 a.m. to 5 o'clock in an office, it can be family situation, health, or just preference. The internet's a lot more flexible for that. And
it's not accessible to anyone, and it's depending on the industry that you're currently in. And I think we are lucky that we are in this industry that is, you can work from anywhere. So you can just bring your laptop, and you need to have a good internet, and that's it. So you can work from anywhere in the world. And I think it's pretty good advantage on other industry that we currently have. So the other question that I would like to ask is about the Shopify Winter Edition. So I would like to get your thought and your expectation about this special edition. So what's your expectation for this edition? And I think the podcast will be out after the edition, because the edition will be out tomorrow. So we are recording in January 13, and tomorrow we will have the new API and the new stuff for Shopify partner and developer.
It's always a little bit nervous before these additions for the developer, because you don't know if what they're going to announce, and you know, if they announce something that's exactly your app, it could be a problem. But it's also exciting to see kind of where you're going, and there's usually a whole bunch of different features released. I think last time it was like 100 or so. So it's hard to keep track of everything, but you can kind of get a sense of the general trend and where Shopify's focusing on. I think in this next one, they're going to continue with the B2B APIs. We haven't done too much with those, and I'm not super familiar, but that seems to be something that they're spending a lot more time on. Then also, again, we don't focus as much on this, but on like checkout extensibility and more of how you can create customizations within the checkout experience and other parts of the customer's journey without relying on older things like the script tags, which just injected JavaScript into the page. And then the thing I'm interested to hear on is if there's going to be an update on the Shopify Sidekick, like the AI powered thing, because I think last editions there was a whole bunch on that, showing how you can customize things with a few messages to the Sidekick. But then since then, we haven't really seen too much. They've rolled out, I think in the documentation for Shopify, there's a AI widget there where you can ask it questions. But as far as managing your store, I haven't seen too much there. So just interested to see how the AI and Shopify plays out.
Yeah, sounds good. I think my expectation also is more B2B, because I think Shopify is not good enough for B2B yet. There's a lot of features that is missing for B2B. But I think from the last edition, they are focusing on B2B, and also I think more checkout accessibility. So we will have like a new Shopify checkout API that we can enhance and extend the checkout. And this is one of the things that I'm excited about. 100 new updates, it's a lot. One of the things that will lead me to another question: how did you keep up with the Shopify update? We have like a 200 update per year, plus some Shopify API deprecation and updates in the meantime.
Yeah, that's always difficult. As far as ways to keep up, there's the official way. So Shopify publishes a API change log that we pipe into a Slack channel, so we can see when there's updates to the official change log. There's also social media. So I'm not super active on Twitter, but I follow different developers and Shopify accounts to kind of get an idea of not only what's technically being updated, but more of the, like, in socially or culturally, like what's the hot thing right now. And then there's also a newsletter called Liquid Weekly that I get every week, and that has some tutorials for freelancers and Shopify, but also there's news in there about the ecosystem and the platform. So I would say between the newsletter, social media, and the official Shopify changelog, I try and stay up to date. But I still miss things. We had a customer support ticket a few months ago, and he's like, you know, you can do this with this API, and somehow that slipped through the cracks, and I had no idea that it was even possible. It is hard to keep up to date, and even though I try, there are some features that get rolled out that I miss.
Yeah, it's very hard to keep up, especially I think Shopify have a good shipping culture at the other, like a big company, and I think they are taking the developer experience too seriously right now, which makes some pressure on the developer to be updated and keep updating about the new Shopify stuff, which is a bit hard, as you mentioned, to manage. But you might need to subscribe to some newsletters that you mentioned to be able to get some update, which might be helpful to you to be able to not like forget updates about Shopify. One of the things that I would like to ask you is some number about your Shopify app. For example, let's say the number of install that you have in your, if you are open to share with you. If it's not, it's not a problem.
Yeah, we have over 10,000 stores using our apps now, and it's a mixture between different apps, but yeah, and that's, we've had more growth in, I would say, the last year, but it hasn't been a spike. It's been, I would say, more consistent growth and accelerating some. I think as you get more known, you get more people from word of mouth and things like that, but it's not been like the exponential curve they talk about in movies, but more of a steady, consistent growth. I was just going to say, we did have during like 2020 during the COVID pandemic, there was also a boost there as more things went online.
Yeah, I think many online company have this exponential growth in COVID, and you can see that with hiring and currently firing and layoff, unfortunately. One of the things that I also would like to mention, so currently you are just focusing in Shopify. Is there any plan to expand to other platforms like WooCommerce, Magento? You think is the Shopify is enough?
Yeah, that's a good question. Something I go back and forth on. Initially, when I started AbleStar, the idea was like, oh yeah, we can move out of just Shopify and work with other e-commerce platforms as well. And we've looked some at that, but it's, on one hand, hard to just expand to another platform. There's so many customizations or things unique about each platform. It makes it hard to build a generic e-commerce space. And I think also the opportunity is still better within Shopify than within some of these other platforms, if you're kind of talking about the level of customer that we're targeting. And also in the near term, medium term, we don't have any plans to focus outside of Shopify. And the flip side to that is then there's more risk because you're dependent on one platform. You know, it's like if you're selling your, if you have a phone or an application for your iPhone, you know, you're dependent on Apple for all of your revenue. And so there is, that does bother me, but, or I do think about that sometimes, but I've been generally pleased with how Shopify manages the partner program. And I know people always have some mistakes, but at the end of the day, I trust them to be fair and run things for the good of the community and the ecosystem. So I'm happy with being just Shopify now.
Makes sense. And I think Shopify, it's enough to handle, I think, and they are expanding to other markets like a B2B. So I think there will be a lot of new Shopify stores every day. So I think it's a pretty good market to be in, especially currently. Other than that, I would like to ask you, so can you give us a day-to-day life of a Shopify founder? How your day goes from the start until the end?
Sure. mine might be a little bit more boring than some people's, but I live in Seville, Spain with my wife and three boys. So a lot of my days with family or with work. Some days I'll drop the boys off at school, or other days I'll come straight to the office. And I have a little office at a co-working space in the downtown. So I'll bike in and usually get in around 9 o'clock or so, and then work during the mornings. Here in Spain, they don't have lunch till about 2 o'clock is kind of the usual time for lunch to start. And that's, for me, that's still too late. But around 1 o'clock, I'll go out and grab lunch, and I'll probably be the only person getting a sandwich or something. But they recognize me now, and they probably put it down to the American. And then work through the afternoon, and in the evening, then either pick up the boys from school, or once we get home, we go out and do something, swim class, or go to the playground or things like that. As far as the content of the work, it's a mixture of some development I still do, though I'm trying to move away from that as much as possible and, you know, offload that to the other two developers we have working for us. We've been focusing more on marketing recently, so I'm trying to build relationships with agencies and other Shopify partners within the ecosystem. So doing calls or emails related to that. We also do some training calls for merchants, especially ones that might have several different Shopify Plus stores, or a team of multiple users. We'll do a Zoom call and kind of walk them through our apps and figure out the best way for them to use the apps. So the days kind of vary. Mondays kind of planning for the week. So we have calls with people on the team, figure out what we're going to focus on the week. And then, the rest of the week is getting everything done. And some people say like, oh, I'll spend Tuesdays on marketing, Wednesdays on programming. And I've tried that, but it doesn't work for me. But at least I try and like have like a block of like several hours is going to be maybe a marketing block. And then several hours I'll do focus on customer success to at least make it so I'm not just switching back and forth between different types of tasks.
Yeah, makes sense. As I said, I have the same thing. I don't like to multitask. I would like to do a long block of time, like a 2 hours plus, focusing on one task. And after that, if I got bored, so I can switch to another task. So I will have my focus time, and I will have my energy in one task, then distribute to multiple tasks, I end up doing nothing. So one of the things that you mentioned is programming. You still coding until this day. What's the text language you're currently using for the app, if you mind sharing?
So the applications are written in Python using the Django framework. And we also use a package called Django REST framework, which gives us a lot of the structure for our REST API that we use internally. So the applications are Python, Django. Our front end is mostly written in Vue.js. We are in the process of moving one of our apps to be embedded within the Shopify admin. And for that app, we're using React on the front end because Shopify has a whole library of visual UI components written in React, and it just makes sense to use that. We're hosted on Google Cloud or Google GCP, Google Compute Platform or Cloud Platform. The reason we chose that over Amazon is Shopify is also on GCP. So Google Cloud goes down, we go down, and Shopify goes down. But so
we are in the same boat.
And then as far as our kind of server management goes, we use Google's hosted Kubernetes, GKE, so Google Kubernetes Engine, to manage our applications. And we don't do advanced features with Kubernetes, but we have a nice system set up where every time you commit code, it will to the main branch, it builds a container, pushes it up, and then it gets rolled out consecutively to the different actual servers running it. So it's pretty good. It's a long ways away from like using FTP to connect to a server and copying over a PHP file and just reloading it, but it works.
Yeah, makes sense. And like people will hear about this tech stack, they will like, think about it's complex to build a Shopify app. But I think when you just starting out, it wasn't a complex tech stack or just like a, it was a simple one than the current one.
Yeah, we did not have Kubernetes when we started. We didn't, I don't think we had the Django REST framework when we started. It was more simple. And then as we built out the front end, we added kind of this internal REST API that the front end uses. And then once we got to a bigger scale, we had to use Kubernetes, or we decided to use Kubernetes to help with the hosting. So there is a sense where you can start small and then gradually move it up. Initially, actually, the first app was hosted on a little computer in the attic of our house, and that worked until the power went out one day and the app went down. So then we then got hosting for it, and now we're on Google Cloud Platform, and I forget, we pay thousands of dollars a month for hosting. But you can start small. And then also now with Shopify's focus on the developer experience, it's a lot, if you want to use their preferred tech stack, it's a lot easier to get started with.
So one of the easier out is if you're already familiar with like, for example, Node.js, React on the front end, there's a lot of like a pre-made template that you can just start with. And also Shopify has a Shopify tutorial that you can just follow, which is using Node.js on the back end and React.js on the front end. And the other route is to use your familiar programming language that you already have. But it might be a bit difficult, but it's depending on the programming language and how confident you are with this programming language. But I think the API is pretty well documented currently than before. And I think the only thing that is a bit complex is the embedded one. So you need to use a Shopify admin bridge to be able to embed the Shopify, your application in the Shopify admin, because there's a lot of how you can identify the Shopify with session and stuff. It was a bit complex if you are using other framework.
If you have an embedded app and you're using a tech stack that's not the standard one, is difficult. We went through that as we're trying to move this one app into the embedded admin, and just all the security things with the browser and displaying stuff in iframe and communicating outside of that, and with the authentication flow, it took a lot of, it's still taking a lot of work. So if I were starting today and I didn't have the strong experience with Python and the developers that we have who are familiar with it, we'd probably use more of the Shopify recommended route and abstract away some of those difficulties.
Yep, makes sense. And I think many of the developers that are new to web development you are pretty familiar with JavaScript. So if you are pretty familiar with JavaScript, so I think Node.js is nothing special. It's just JavaScript on the browser. You will just need to learn some backend programming concept, like a file system, API, how does it work? And it's pretty easy to learn. It's not a very big learning curve if you are any familiar with JavaScript. And also React, you can, I don't think, it's currently, it's not that hard compared to, like, I remember the class components was a bit hard compared to functional components right now. Functional components are more standard, are easy to learn because it's just like a normal function that will return a JSX component. So it's pretty easy to pick up. And also the React folk are easy to learn compared to the previous React class components style. So the other question that I would like to ask you is your recommendation for book, tool, online resources for an inspired Shopify developer. So let's say the tool that you use on a daily basis for Shopify development as a developer to make the question much easier. Let's say what's the VS Code extension that you use, like what's your resources you go to when you have a problem, something like that.
I think from a, maybe I can take it like business level and then more development. Sure. From business level, I think there's helpful resources outside of just the Shopify partner ecosystem. There's a podcast called Startups for the Rest of Us that it's by Rob Walling that I've listened to on and off for years now. And it's talking about the SaaS world in general. So more of these subscription type services. And there's some differences between, I guess, the bigger SaaS world and Shopify, but lots of the things they talk about are similar, things with pricing and if you want to translate your app, dealing with customer support and things like that. So I would recommend the Startups for the Rest of Us podcast, and that's something I listen to weekly now. That may be for managing the company, one tool that we use a lot is we built out an internal CRM tool for our apps, and this just makes it so much easier to help with debugging issues that customers have. So you can, if you have access to the CRM, you can put in a Shopify store's name that has the app installed, and you can see which activities they've done in the past and kind of get an idea of where they might be running into the problem. So that helps us a whole lot with the customer support side, where instead of trying to run database queries to figure out what the customer's done, you can just quickly open it up on your browser or even on your phone and see what they've done. As far as a more technical VS Code extensions, on the Python side, I've started playing around more with like type checking, so Python isn't a statically typed language, and I'm still not familiar with all the details of this, but the idea is you have a variable that could be a number or a string, and lots of times that can lead to bugs within the code where you're expecting this variable to be a number, but it's actually a string. And more in our code, we're trying to use these extensions that will kind of enforce type checking. So they'll give you warnings and it'll say stuff like, you're assuming that this is a string, but it's possible it could be a number. And that's been good to proactively catch some bugs that we have, especially we deal with lots of outside input in the form of spreadsheets. So if people have product data they need to update, they'll upload spreadsheets. And when we deal with that, there's a lot of times data can come in different formats. And so these VS Code extensions to ensure that the typing is correct have helped us a lot.
Okay. Do you have any book that you would like to recommend?
Trying to think. This is a old one, but there's a book called Start Small, Stay Small by Rob Walling, who does the Startups for the Rest of Us podcast. And that was a good book just to kind of get you in the mindset about SaaS companies and how they work. And especially for smaller SaaS companies that are run either just yourself or a smaller team. Because I think one of the problems is lots of times you hear about like, oh, Netflix did this, Google did this, Apple did this, but they're at a completely different scale from you, and what they need to do to grow is completely different than really what you need to do to grow. And at the end of the day, I don't want AbleStar to be a billion-dollar company. It needs to, you know, make enough to support our employees, ourselves, and go there. So the goals are different, and it's easy to just read the news and take lessons from these big companies that you see. But start small. It's older now, so there's probably parts that are out of date. But the general idea is like it helps you focus more on what you're actually working on, which is a smaller software business that isn't going to be worth $1 billion, but can provide a good life for you, your family, and the people that you work with.
Sounds good. Thank you for sharing this. And the last thing that I would like to mention, so you have 1 minute, so you can share anything that you would like to share with the audience. You can share your social media link, recommendation for online resources, as you mentioned before, podcast, YouTube channel, you name it. So you have the mic, and you can share all the link that you would like to share.
Okay, great. I mentioned I'm not too active on Twitter, but I do have an account there, and I keep up to date with things. My handle is the number one, Daniel Beck. So you can find me on there, and happy to connect and help out, or, you know, if you have any questions about the Shopify ecosystem or starting SaaS companies in general, always happy to help out there. The company is AbleStar at AbleStar.com, and on there you can find links to our 5 Shopify apps. Thank you.
No worries. So all the link that Daniel mentioned will be in the description in the YouTube video description. And if you are listening from a podcast provider like Shopify or like a Spotify or Apple Podcast, you can find in the show notes. So I'm still switching between Shopify and Spotify. I used to have this problem before knowing Shopify. I used to call Shopify Spotify, and the other one, the other thing, it was a bit confusing at first. So thank you so much for Daniel for taking your time and having this podcast. And thank you for the audience for watching until the end and listening until the end. And see you in the next episode.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. So we can...